This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The recent scandal involving FIFA might be leading newscasts, but it shouldn't overshadow the 2015 FIFA Women's World Cup games that are about to start in Canada. While America was late to the game of soccer, it continues to grow in popularity, and the success of the U.S. women's national teams has done much to win over new fans. Here to talk about women's soccer programs in the United States, give us a preview of the World Cup and look at the U.S. team's prospects, are Woody Sherwood, head coach for Xavier University's women's soccer team, Bobby Papione, girls director of coaching for the Cincinnati United Premier, part of the Cincinnati United Soccer Club, and WVXU reporter and soccer player and fan, Tana Weingartner. We always hear about Tana's exploits on the soccer field and enjoy them very much. So thanks, everybody, for being here this afternoon. And you can join our conversation, 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Woody, what's the history of the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team? They started playing in the mid-'80s, didn't they?
Sure. They kind of picked up a little bit later than the men, as with a lot of countries did. So 91 was the big year when we saw them get on the board, and that's getting to their world championship. And, you know, it certainly has changed a lot in terms of back then. That year they arrived back in the U.S. and there's a couple dozen people in the airport to greet them. And nowadays, you know, we'll sell out big women's games, and you'll see in Canada, I'm sure, huge crowds for the U.S. and for a lot of teams. And it just shows you how far the women's games come.
Yeah. Bobby, how good has this team been? I mean, they've been pretty spectacular, haven't they?
Yeah, the women's team, you know, for the U.S. has done quite well over the years. They won the 91 World Cup, they won the 1999 World Cup, and they finished as runner-ups in the last World Cup. So they've obviously had a very storied tradition of being successful, and as well as winning multiple gold medals at the Olympic Games. So they're going to this one, obviously, as one of the favorites. And as Woody was saying, the attraction to the team, it continues to grow every year with a lot of youth players, you know, just loving these girls and seeing them be so successful. And we know we have a lot of families from our club that are actually going to be traveling to Canada to get to see these games. And I'm pretty jealous, actually, that I don't get to go myself. I'm going to be stuck here playing and coaching, but I enjoy that, of course. But it's quite a treat to be able to go to Canada and it be so close for these families to be able to see them play live.
Are you heading up there, Tana?
Yeah, not to rub it in your face or anything, but I'll
thanks for that. Appreciate it.
She'll be one of the people up in Canada.
Yeah, we're heading to Winnipeg and Vancouver.
You've been following soccer, playing soccer for a long time, Tana. Tell me, when did you first start? When did you get hooked on soccer?
Well, actually, not that soon. I started playing in college, so years ago. Not for a college. I just fell in love with the game, and it's really something I think that once you do, I'm sure these guys would agree, once you try it, you fall in love with it, like any sport that you become passionate about. And then was able to get to watch the 2003 World Cup when it got transferred back to the U.S. and got to see some of those games that they played in Columbus. And once you see the level of athletes that are playing and their determination, you just get hooked.
Yeah, what would you say has been the big game for you? I think for me, 1999, seeing them beat China in that shootout. I think a lot of people would say that was just fantastic because who was it? Brandi Chastain.
Oh, we're not going to talk about the shirt, Mark.
But let me just put it this way: the exuberance.
Yes,
the celebration was just great after they won that shootout. I mean I got to confess, I don't know much about soccer. I'm not a huge soccer fan. Sorry, soccer fans, don't kill me. But I enjoyed that immensely, seeing it. I like seeing it played on this level. There's just a different feel when you see it played at the international level.
And with 90,000 people there that day in 99, you know, that's something that certainly took it to a different level. And I think it got some bandwagon people on board, having seen what the energy's like, the enthusiasm's like, the commitment, the athleticism, and what it can look like at its highest level.
Yeah, it is amazing.
Somebody was just noting the other day, for one of the last send-off series, I think even for the last World Cup, they had about 6,000 people in the stands for one of their prep matches. And then just this last weekend on Saturday, they sold out Red Bull Arena in New York, New Jersey, for their final send-off match as they head into it.
Yeah, it really is picking up in popularity.
Yeah, absolutely. And you see that you know, the kids are wearing jerseys with their favorite players' names. And obviously, you know, the World Cup happens every 4 years and the Olympics do as well. And the need is for people to not just be excited about it just those years only, but really appreciate the sport and what it can bring to, you know, a whole country and the entire world every time it's being played. And, you know, we are very fortunate to be able to do this full time, Woody and I, and be a part of the game and work with kids and who want to, you know, continue to play this amazing sport and maybe someday have the dream of wearing the U.S. jersey. And it's pretty special experience for those players, obviously, to have that opportunity to be, you know, called a part of the women's national team. And it's going to be a great summer for that.
Yeah, but Bobby and Woody, why do you think the women's national program has been so successful in the U.S.? What's been the keys for that?
I think it started off with athleticism. I think if you look back at our original teams, how athletic we were, and in terms of other countries now starting to catch us a little bit, I think is some super skillful countries have come into the game, and if they can get their athleticism, strength, speed components up to the U.S., it's going to be even harder for us to stay up at the top. But originally, it's the American work ethic, and it's hard, fast, strong athletes.
Yeah, definitely. That was always a staple for the teams early on, and I think the, you know, the technical people inside of the U.S. have started to notice that it can't just be those things that's going to make us be successful. We really need to get in to our youth players at the youngest of levels and make them have a value and appreciation for being a part of the ball as almost attached to their foot. And how can we show them that, you know, you want the ball, be as creative with the ball as possible, because we want to be able to develop players that not only are big, strong, and fast, but I would say, and I think Woody would agree, more importantly, creative, confident with the ball, and can do some of these special things that other players across the world have been valuing for years now. And if we can combine athleticism, obviously, with the important technical part of the game, then I think we can still be, you know, one of the top teams across the world to contend with year in and year out.
You know, Cincinnati's always been a strong area for soccer. How are we doing, Bobby, when it comes to developing women's players?
Yeah, I think that the Cincinnati area has done quite well in developing players that have gone on to play for the national team. Heather Mitz, who's no longer with the national team, is a Cincinnati native, and she grew up here and played and was part of the full women's national team. I know our club has had several youth national team players, most recently Rose Lavelle, who's on the mm-hmm. U23 women's national team and was on the U20 Women's World Cup team just a year ago. And we've had other national team players, as have some of the other clubs in town as well. So the city of Cincinnati has done a great job of embracing the sport. And I think the coaches around town have really pushed the envelope with the players to go into that technical and side of the game, where we're trying to develop the players to be, you know, one day wearing the national team jersey.
Can I jump in with a question?
Sure, you can.
So a lot of the people, when you look at the national team, they come in like pod areas. There's a bunch from California. New Jersey's a solid point. How does Cincinnati raise its level so that it gets more attention, so the players that you have here really break into that national team circuit?
Sure. I think one of the things that maybe at time hinders us is sometimes our weather, because if you look at it, sometimes in Cincinnati, the weather holds us back from playing consistently 12 months out of the year. And you look at a lot of those other places, such as California, you're getting 11 to 12 months of good weather. And if you add that up throughout the years as they're developing as players, you might be missing out on 1 to 2 years of development at times. That could be a reason why. However, you know, there are indoor facilities and other ways for players to play, such as indoor futsal, soccer, and that'll allow them to continue to develop. But I think the entire country as a whole is doing a better job of trying to find those players in some of these markets where there aren't as big, such as your Californias and your Texases and your New Yorks, and get into those areas through regional training centers and allow players to come in and be showcased so we can see how they fare against other players. And so I know the U.S. soccer technical staff is working hard to find a way to make sure players aren't missed. With the pure size of the U.S., it's extremely difficult to find everyone, and everyone knows that. But however, they're working hard to find ways to identify these players, and, you know, whether it's be from Cincinnati or somewhere out in the middle of Indiana or wherever it may be, try to find those players to bring them in and make them be a part of this national team environment if the mold fits.
How do you think Cincinnati is doing in terms of developing players for soccer?
You know, I think historically they've done extremely well, considering our climate, considering, you know, one of the big things I have here issue is the surface. I think in terms of training players year-round, not only need good weather, but you need quality surfaces. And I think that's a fight all the clubs have got, you know, internally, is they've got, you know, there's plenty of green space around, but to really develop pure, technical, skillful players, you've got to be able to put them on a decent, on a quality surface. But over the years, Cincinnati has certainly held its own with a lot of those other states and cities that we talked about.
You know, Bobby, you mentioned Rose Lavelle. She played on the U23 team that just came back from the Four Nations tournament. How did the U.S. team fare in that?
They did quite well in that tournament. And, you know, Rose has been, you know, a late entry, per se, into the women's national team environment. She didn't start at 14 and 15 being in those environments. She was on some regional team environments, but then she got called up later in her youth career, and she's just went from the U20 Women's World Cup, where she was one of the top players in that environment and helped the U.S. there, and then she's now gone up to the under-23 women's national team. So we're really excited about the progress that she's made for herself individually, as well as you know, for being a product of our club and obviously a representative of the city of Cincinnati.
Yeah, she got a goal and an assist in their last game, so that's impressive. And Julie Foudy was in town, former national team player. She's a commentator now with ESPN. I asked her about Rose Lavelle. She said, "Oh yeah, she's good. She's one to watch." So Julie Foudy agrees.
So Rose is a midfielder, is that right, Tana?
Correct.
Correct,
yeah.
Midfielder, Bobby. Okay, she plays college ball at Wisconsin, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, one of the up and comers to watch in this area.
For sure.
Are there any other women in the Cincinnati area who are at Rose's level that you would say keep an eye on them?
You know, there's a couple kids. Ohio Elite has got some kids in their club system that have been brought into some camps for the national team. I know they've got a goalkeeper, a Mount Notre Dame kid going to Carolina. A couple pretty good field players. There's a pool of, you know, maybe 3 to 5 Cincinnati area kids that if they continue to do well, will continue to get looks at some of these camps. And then it's being able to stand out enough in those youth camps to make the cut.
Yeah, I think that, you know, as we continue to work to develop these players, you'll see hopefully more and more kids from the Cincinnati area. I know recently one of our players from our club, Aaliyah Elnagar, was selected to the under-15 national team camp just recently in March, and she had a great experience there. She's a defender, and I know they're going to continue to watch her, and there's other players that I know they're keeping eyes on coming through the youth ranks in Cincinnati. So, you know, we're working hard to develop them at our club at Cup, and I know other coaches across the area are doing the same thing too.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation about women's soccer in the U.S. and the upcoming World Cup. 513-419-7100. Let's talk about this current women's team that's going into the World Cup. Who are the key players on that team?
Well, obviously, there's Abby Wambach, who's our big striker, our big presence. She has yet to win a World Cup, so she says this is the last crown that's sort of a piece missing in her crown, so she wants it bad. And she's been training. She's not been playing with her team. She took with her professional team. She took, I guess, a leave of absence, you'd call it, just to focus strictly on her training. So obviously you're going to want to watch for her. And we're also watching Alex Morgan. They said last week she's been dealing with a bone bruise in her knee, and she said that she was going to be ready to go by the first game. Now they're backpedaling and saying not so much. So personally, I'm wondering if that's maybe a little tactic. They don't want to let people know. Maybe she's good to go, and we're going to throw her out there and surprise our competition. I don't know.
You know, I was at a national team camp in 1997, I think it was. I spent 3 days out in Chula Vista, and the full women's team was there. And Christy Rampone, who was formerly Christy Pierce at that time, who's now, I believe, 40, and is the mainstay now of the program, as she's gone through a couple generations of players, really. That was one of her first camps, and I remember seeing her at that camp, and she's done a heck of a job anchoring the back line and still being able to do it coming into Canada this summer.
Bobby, who would you say are key players to keep an eye on?
I think, obviously, you know, you have your players like Abby Wambach, and people are wondering how, you know, Alex Morgan's going to do. And I think it's very important for some of the newbies to the national team squad and some of the youngsters to really step up. And I think there are players that can do that. Some of the ones that I'm really looking forward to seeing play on this national stage is Kristen Press, who's a forward and also can play out wide as a winger or as a midfielder. She's a goal scorer. She puts the ball in the back of the net, and in the end, that's what you need to do.
That's what counts.
Yeah. And yep. And I really like what she brings to the U.S. Women's National Team, and she just continues to impress every time I see her play. I'm really excited to see her play. And another one is Morgan Bryan, who's a midfielder who's just recently graduated from college at the University of Virginia, and she's got great technical ability, sees the game very well, is very creative and makes the other players around her better. And I think when you have players like those two youngsters, it's going to be a nice way for them to continue to develop, you know, through this Women's World Cup and obviously in ones to come. But hopefully they have a big impact as the young ones in 2015 in Canada.
And she's the Herman Trophy winner this year, right?
Correct, yeah.
I would also say keep an eye on, I know you said Chrissy Rampone, and she's my favorite, but Julie Johnston, who's kind of taken Rampone's starting role there in the back line, she's been on fire of late, even scored a goal, I think, in their tune-up matches. So another name to keep an eye on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think she's a great newcomer to the back line and has done quite well. And obviously, you can only be as strong as your goalkeeper as well, mm-hmm. I think. And Hope Solo is definitely one of the world's best. She's had some in and outs with certain things off the field, but I'll tell you what, when the game is going, she's one of the best in the world, and as long as you keep a clean sheet or a shutout there, you're always in the game, and I think she's one that we're lucky to have representing us as the goalkeeper. So.
And you're talking with the newbies, but there's some pretty good veteran leadership on this team, isn't there?
Absolutely, yeah, no, for sure, and I think you have that from some of the players like Carly Lloyd, Allie Krieger, Chrissy Rampone. Whether she plays or not, she's going to bring that veteran experience who's been a part of, you know, many championship teams, and she's going to help the players that are getting in the match or not getting in to stay confident and focused, because there are three group games, and the U.S. I think is going to be definite contender, obviously, to win their group and win the entire event. But having confidence to be able to play an entire month long of matches and training and staying focused with the end goal in sight, the veteran leadership is going to be crucial to keeping those youngsters focused on the main prize. And I think that's what a lot of those experienced players are going to be able to do for some of the young ones on the national team.
Woody, who's coaching the national team this year?
Well, that brings up another interesting matchup, which is in the USA's group is the former U.S. coach, which is Pia, who's coaching Sweden. And okay. So she'll be coaching against Jill as they're in our group. So that'll be interesting. Pia was one of the best players of all time. And in 2012, I think it was, she left the U.S. to head back kind of for her dream to maybe finish out some coaching back where she had her roots and everything came from. So that's going to be an exciting matchup to watch, even though the U.S. should be okay in that game just because of the storyline there and maybe the history and scouting report that Pia would have on the U.S.
Now, tell me about the style of play that the U.S. team has. Are they aggressive, or are they more they defensive? How would you describe them?
Well, I think they've morphed a little bit. You know, I think they were always we go back to the bigger, faster, stronger. They were maybe a little more direct than I would have liked. the antithesis of one of my favorite teams, which is Japan, which is a very indirect, short, connecting every pass type of soccer, very attractive to watch. But the U.S. has a pretty good balance now of players who are able to play direct when they need to, but also some attractive combination play through the midfield. They'll always work hard. They'll always be hard defensively. You know, you're never going to have to worry about that. But they've morphed a little bit into a team that can do a few more things than maybe in some past years.
And he mentioned Japan, and I'll just throw out there, you said players to watch. For Japan, Hamari Sawa is going to be making her sixth World Cup appearance. That's more than
That's
any
amazing.
Man or woman has ever done. And so she's made the team again. So I think she's one to keep an eye on, too.
Sure.
That is amazing. We had a question by email. They wanted to know if any of the guests know what network is carrying the games, especially since we can't go. Tana is.
Those are going to be on Fox and the Fox group of networks.
Okay. And when does the U.S. team start play, Tana?
The U.S. team starts on Tuesday, I believe. Does that sound right to everybody?
Monday or Tuesday.
Monday. They start on Monday night against Australia. So, and Australia is another strong team as well. Mm-hmm. And for those that don't know soccer as well, every time a World Cup draw comes out, they look to see which group is called the group of death, which means the toughest group to get out of. And the U.S. has definitely been drawn into the group of death because you have the U.S. itself, which is always a contender and is the number two team in the world right now. And then you have Sweden, which is a top five team in the world. You have Australia, which I think is 11th. And then you look at Nigeria, who is the African champions as well. And they're not an easy team to play against. There's some very special players on that team that can change the game in a heartbeat. So, the U.S. is not going to have an easy road, but I think, with the combination of leadership and as well as youngsters that can play too, they're going to be able to. They're my favorite to win their group here and get out of it. But it's a very strong group with them, and especially the opening match against Australia is not going to be easy.
Yeah, what is that? Is it a pretty tough group?
It is certainly the group of death, and the groups are really spread out really nicely in terms of looking at, you know, a clear favorite in some of them, and then you know, a little bit closer in others. But the groups really are laid out well. But certainly, people could easily make the argument that the U.S. has the toughest group.
Now, how's the format for this work? I just basically watch the games and cheer my team on. But what's the format? How does this work? How do you make your way through the World Cup?
So Tana, I think, has a interactive almost bracket there, but it's not like the NCAA basketball. It's not where it's that easy to follow. It depends on where you finish in your group as to how you advance, who you play. So it's not like an NCAA basketball where you could look and clearly see who you're going to play for sure each round. It depends on where you kind of finish and if there's tie breaks and what goes on. So it's hard to predict for sure who you're going to play when because of how it's laid out until you get a little bit deeper in the tournament, and then it starts to play itself out.
Yeah, so you have as Woody was saying, you know who your first three opponents are in your group, and then after that, it depends.
Is it a
you
mystery?
Know? So okay. Yeah, so after your group play, everyone gets their three games. Then you have a champion and a runner-up from your groups that advance out of those six groups. So that would be 12 teams that advance guaranteed from there. And then from there, they also pull the next best four teams based on some points and tiebreakers and things like that. So it goes then into a knockout round of 16. So 12 teams get automatic bids out of their group by being champion or runner-ups from their groups, and then they have the four wild cards. So what's nice for the U.S. is that if they win their group, then their first round game in the round of, or their first game in the round of 16 is going to be against a wild card team, which will be the third place team in somebody else's group. So that would be a easier match, even though it's the round of 16 and anything can happen. That would be an easier match rather than finishing as a runner-up and having to play a group champion in the round of 16 games. So, you know, every game is important. Every little point is important as well. So winning the group, I think, is an important thing for the U.S. because then they can have a better matchup, hopefully, in the round of 16. But in the end, you got to play who's in front of you and beat everyone if you want to have it, because there's only one champion. So.
Tan, am I hearing right? U.S. is the team to beat in this. Is that
in the tournament or
yeah,
in their
in the World Cup?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people would say that. As a fan, you have to say that. But I'm worried about other teams. France is also favored to really do well. They've got Nasib, who I think is a phenomenal player. But on the upside, we did beat France 2-0 in the Algarve Cup that was played a few months ago back in Portugal. So that's a good sign. I also think Japan is threatening, and frankly, I think Sweden, because I think you can't count out Pia Sundhage, their coach.
Who do you think has a shot at this as well?
I think he probably has six teams or so. Tana got most of them there. Germany could be in the mix.
Yeah.
I think in terms of people watching, when we talk about Nasib from France, you can make an argument she's the best attacking midfielder in the world, and I don't want here to have Carly Lloyd or my old player Lauren Cheney call in and argue me on that, but she's one of the special ones to watch, just like Marta would be for Brazil. But there's probably six teams that could have a shot at it, I would say.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and I think obviously you got to throw in the host country of Canada. Playing in front of your own fans and at home is always an added bonus. But I definitely think Germany is a contender. I mean, they've won the World Cup twice, and the only thing hurting them right now is their best player Kessler, who's the Women's Player of the Year, is actually going to be out for this tournament. So it's going to be sad for soccer fans to not be able to see her play, but anybody that's facing up against Germany, they're glad that she's not going to be wearing that uniform against them. So, but I think there's a lot of quality teams, and it's pretty wide open about who could actually take home the World Cup title and lift the cup. So I'm excited to see them play, and I know we're really encouraging all of our players at our club, Cincinnati United, to really watch as many games as possible, because the youth players can learn so much by just watching it. Not only just, you know, seeing the atmosphere and how big the game is, but watching the individual things that the players are doing or what they're doing in groups, and seeing how that can maybe relate that to their playing experiences when they get back on the field. And there's a real energy and excitement you know, around the World Cup, and then you see the players at practice the next day and they're all talking about the game, and it's great to have that every, you know, every World Cup or Olympics, but it's more so, can we get that to happen more often than just a couple times out of the year?
Yeah, this is definitely where I really enjoy watching soccer, is when it reaches this level. It's just, it is incredible play. Put you on the spot, Bobby. Who do you think is going to win this?
it's going to be tough. I mean, with the injuries to some squads and not knowing, you know, how the group play is going to go out, I'm still going to pick the U.S. to win the World Cup. I think that, you know, Germany's still going to be the contender, and I do really enjoy watching France play, but I'm going to pick the U.S. to win the World Cup. I believe in the girls and what we're doing, and obviously being a passionate fan for the American team, I have to pick them. So
okay. What about you, Woody? Put you on the spot here.
So seeing as we're going to be right in the middle of our Sherwood Soccer Academy and have 200 youth kids at camp wearing USA jerseys, some of whom will have listened to this, I'll need to pick the USA with, I like Japan up there as well.
Tana, what about you? Are you on the USA bandwagon?
Well, look,
as well?
you get a star for every World Cup you win, and we had two on our jersey. We've had two on our jersey since 1999, and we want three, Mark.
Okay, so that says it all. So thank you all very much, Woody, Bobby, and Tana. But enjoy talking to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Woody Sherwood is head coach for Xavier University's women's soccer team. Bobby Papioni is the girls' director of coaching for the Cincinnati United Premier, part of the Cincinnati United Soccer Club. And WVXU reporter and soccer player and fan Tana Weingartner, who will be heading to the World Cup herself. Have fun, Tana. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. Today's program was produced by Pete Reitmeier with help from Kevin Reynolds and Jim Nolan. The technical director was Bruce Ellis. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU.